Hello, and welcome to the Journal of Accountancy podcast. I'm Courtney Vian, a senior editor with the Journal of Accountancy. Today, I'll be speaking with Ted Benna, otherwise known as the father of the 401k. Ted was the first person to see the potential in Section 401k of the tax code back in 1980. He launched the first 401k savings plan at his own company, the Johnson Companies, and things took off from there. He now runs Benna 401k LLC, a consulting firm that runs with small employers to help them choose and implement the best retirement plans. He's written several books, including 401ks for Dummies and 401k 40 Years Later. Today, he'll be telling us the story of how the 401k came to be, how it became so popular, how it changed retirement, and what he sees as some of its drawbacks. We are very happy to have him here. Back in 1980, Ted Benna was the co-founder and co-owner of a benefit consulting company called the Johnson Companies, located in Pennsylvania. One of its clients, a local bank, had asked him to help revamp its retirement plan. The bank wanted to eliminate cash bonuses and move to a tax-deferred profit-sharing plan. Ted knew that back then most employees didn't like this kind of plan because they preferred to have bonuses instead of having their money stashed away. To get lower-paid employees to buy into the plan, he suggested having the employer match their funds. He realized that a newly developed portion of the Internal Revenue Code, Section 401k, would now enable employees to make contributions before tax. These insights, combining retirement savings with pre-tax contributions and employer matches, formed the basis of the 401k plans we have today. The bank didn't end up adopting the plan that Ted proposed, so he launched it at his own firm, and the rest is history. Hello, Ted.
Hi, Courtney. It's certainly my pleasure to be with you today.
So tell me, how did you come up with the 401k?
Well, you know, Courtney, there is myth and there's reality. The myth, which has been published without being a quote from me, was that I had my dark eye shades on, was digging into the IRS code and discovered this paragraph no one knew about. And that is certainly far from true. So, the reality is what happened was I added some things to, something that was there, which many of us knew about, including me, that weren't, anticipated. And the two creative things that I added were the matching employer contribution and also the opportunity for employees to make pre-tax contributions themselves. And there wasn't anything in the, in the code, in the legislation, saying that you could do either one of those things, but there also wasn't anything saying thou shalt not, so I chose to take the more aggressive interpretation. And fortunately, that ultimately held up. So, what happened is that's when I was working on that project that I came up with, this approach. And the key, in terms of adding the matching employer contribution was the fact that the original legislation, the discrimination testing, involved the highest paid one-third versus the bottom two-thirds. And, the top one-third, how much they could contribute, was linked to what the bottom two-thirds contributed. And, I knew back in that day in the banking environment that, getting tellers to save money for retirement using a tax, small tax break alone wasn't probably going to get enough participation. So it was when I decided to link the matching contribution in order to up the ante, and give them a bigger incentive. And, playing on in that story, Courtney, they didn't go ahead with it because their attorney didn't want them pioneering something that hadn't been done before. So we eventually did a bank for them or a plan for them about 3 years later. So, the actual first one we did for our own company, which, involved about 65 employees at that time.
So take me back to the actual 401k section of the tax code. What was that intended to do originally?
It was, the Tax Revenue Act of 1978. And, Courtney, it was a page and a half long. Okay, and that turned the world upside down here. Obamacare was, what was it, 700 pages? I don't know.
It was hundreds,
crazy number. To give you an idea. And, there was no tent. And I mean, the biggest issue here is the fact that obviously today this is the primary way for, you know, for most workers to be able to save for retirement now. And it was never intended politically. It was a fluke.
So how did Congress react to the 401k when it started to catch on?
Well, Congress really wasn't an issue. Our main concern was what was going to happen to Treasury, because Treasury had to issue the regulations that ultimately would govern how this operated. And I was pretty comfortable that the match would be okay, but the more questionable issue was whether the support would be there for employees to be able to elect to make pre-tax contributions themselves. And, you know, fortunately, I had the opportunity to talk about those issues with the person who was drafting the regulations and, you know, had enough input on there, you know, to help influence that. But, you know, we were a bit anxious, you know, until the regulations got published and, you know, in the proposed form, and supported both those ideas ultimately.
Why do you think the 401k caught on like it did?
I knew it would. And frankly, I didn't have to be that smart to know that. One of the reasons was that most of the big companies, you know, like Bethlehem Steel and, you know, IBMs of the world, et cetera, at that time, had what were known as thrift savings plans. And the way they worked is that employees put their money in after tax. They got a match from the employer, and a lot of the big companies, the match was dollar for dollar. So I realized that, you know, once we got this thing out there and it became known, that clearly the senior execs who were putting in maybe $30,000 a year, you know, at a 70% marginal tax rate, you know, when they heard, hey, you might be able to do that pre-tax, we're certainly going to want to jump on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's definitely what happened.
Were you ever able to patent the 401k idea or get any kind of remuneration from it?
We took a shot at that, and we were told by the Philadelphia attorney we hired that it wasn't possible. And, you know, I was asked that once during an NPR interview, and, you know, I gave that answer, and then I said, you know, there were about 40 million participants at the time, and I said, well, you know, it would be all right if each participant sent me a quarter. and about a week later, I went to the mail, and by golly, here were two envelopes with quarters in them, and one with a 25-cent check. So I'm still waiting for the rest, though.
Yeah. So the 401k has been around for 40 years now. How, in your view, has it changed retirement?
So far it's been in a good way, actually. And by the way, I'm, you know, if you read some of the interviews I've done, you know I've hit pretty hard at the you know, the negatives. I it's not perfect by any means, but you know, the biggest benefit to 401k is that it turns spenders into savers by making that the first priority. And, you know, I continue to run into individuals that say, gee, I really want to thank you. You know, I wouldn't have been able to retire now as I am without this. Or, you know, a younger participant says, you know, I've accumulated $10,000, $15,000 that I know I wouldn't have otherwise. And, you know, that's been reality. The other thing that's significant is that, you know, there are over, I don't know, 500,000-600,000 of these plans now, and 90% of them cover businesses that have less than 100 employees. And, you know, most of them would have never had, you know, a pension plan, so their, you know, their employees would have been without anything otherwise. And, you know, unfortunately, currently we still have about, you know, half the workforce that, you know, is without any retirement plan, and, you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to chat about that here a little later.
I'd like to talk about pensions a little bit. So some people say that the 401k is partly responsible for killing off pensions. Is that true?
I don't believe it is, and I've detailed this in my book. And I started in the pension side of the business. I actually took one actuarial exam, and decided I'd rather have them than be one. So, tense as that was. But the the primary reason for the the shutdown of defined benefit plans, ERISA is clearly one of them, and that was legislation that was badly needed and was passed to shore up the financial condition of the pension system. But unfortunately, it included a provision in there which, certainly older accountants will be aware of, younger ones won't know probably, is that pre-ERISA, a business could shut down a pension plan and have no liability exposure, regardless of how badly it was underfunded. And as soon as ERISA was enacted, it had a provision in it where PBGC got the right on a termination of an underfunded plan to step in and claim some assets. And I had one of the first plans, went through PBGC. That was not a good experience for the president and the owner. And, that bad publicity certainly got picked up quickly by the accounting firms who told their clients, look, if you don't have a pension plan, you for sure don't want to have one. That definitely became a key factor. And frankly, we were unable to sell DB plans after that. It became impossible. And another thing that was included in PBGC that's impacted is the maximum benefit limitations. Before ERISA, there weren't any maximum benefit limits. And so when we were working with public company and recommending to them potentially increasing pension benefits, the CEO, CFO, HR directors wanted to know how this was going to impact them personally because they had a significant stake in the pension benefits.
And as you write in your book, only a small percentage of the workforce had pensions at any one time.
There's never more than 30% of private sector employees covered by traditional pension plans, and those were, for the most part, the big companies. But the other thing, Courtney, that gets ignored in this is the fact that, my first employment was in the home office of an insurance company in Philadelphia, and they had a pension plan. To be a participant, you had to be 30 if you were male and 35 if you were female. You had to stay there until you were 60 to get any benefits. If you left before that, you got zippo, absolutely nothing. And that wasn't, that wasn't exactly good old days.
You also mentioned some problems with 401ks and the way that they're administered.
Well, we have a number of problems. Start with the first one, and this gets back into the small employer, independent contractor issue, and that is, it's not unusual to find 401ks being sold to small business and independent contractors when there are better alternatives, and because the larger financial organizations, financial advisors, that's pretty much all they know about doing. That's an issue. The other, is what happened expense-wise, and I've covered this in detail in the book. At the beginning, the expenses were all paid by the employer, except for the absolute direct clean investment expenses, which, didn't have any layers added on top of them. And we transitioned then into what became known as bundled arrangements, and really what got bundled were the fees, all being paid by the participants, driving up the cost many times, 10 times what they were paying before. And then the next evolution was adding another layer of fees on top, which, particularly in the smaller plan market, typically bumped the fees up to, as much as 2% a year, which is, quite excessive.
And you mentioned there are so many options now that it's, and there used to be like one or two.
Well, yes. I mean, originally these plans only had two options. with 25% multiple. So, you know, there were only five alternatives you had available. You know, you had two different funds, a guaranteed fixed and an equity, and you split your 75-25 or 0-100 the other way. You know, that was it. You know, it took me about 2 minutes to explain the investments to participants. And, you know, this thing just got nuts, totally out of control. And, you know, for most participants, it's overwhelming for them.
So if it were up to you, how would you improve the 401k?
So I'm definitely not a fan of bigger government, but, you know, we haven't made any progress in 40-some years of closing the gap in terms of the employees who don't have the opportunity to save for retirement via their employer. And so I'm in favor of a mandate that, you know, would require employers with maybe more than 10 employees to have to offer a payroll deduction plan. That would be number one. Number two is that businesses that have 401ks, you know, many of them have been adding automatic enrollment, but not all. I would require that any employer that has a plan, that employees are automatically enrolled and, you know, have to elect out rather than the other way around, and that annually their contributions would be increased, you know, maybe 1% a year until they got up to 6% or so that they were contributing. And the next would be to put a lock on these funds, to not put employees in the position when they change jobs or when a plan is terminated to have the ability to take a cash payout at that point in time. It's it's not smart to have 30-35-year-olds, you know, in that position when they change jobs. And then I guess probably the last gets into the, you know, the distribution during the retirement stage. I would put some tighter standards on that, and, you know, maybe limit the maximum that could be taken as a lump sum of retirement to 10%, and require spreading the rest out over some period, such as life expectancy. And the last in that regard would be to add a tax incentive. Many participants in these plans have to think about locking in guaranteed lifetime income through a fixed annuity. Will pay them an income for life. And so I think it would be beneficial to have $1,000 a month, you know, as an annuity guaranteed lifetime income that wasn't taxable, you know, once somebody retired. So that pretty well covers it.
You mentioned that 401ks have high fees. Is there anything employers can do about the fees?
You know, the problem there, in my opinion, is the fact that the employer isn't writing out checks to pay the fees that participants are. And particularly in smaller employers, that is really wacky, because the participants with the biggest balances are typically the owners and senior execs. So they're out of their tax deferred accounts, you know, paying those higher fees when they could do much better by, paying non-investment fees, by the company and getting a business deduction for them. So, you know, it really needs to turn around.
Yeah. So the employers might have the opportunity to renegotiate the fees if they were interested?
Well, definitely.
So 401ks aren't always the best option for smaller businesses?
No. They're very complex. They can be quite expensive, and they also have a significant liability exposure. And, you know, so these alternatives that I've developed for small employers, will pretty much mirror, you know, what can be done with a 401k without having those issues to deal with. And, one of them actually has the potential of producing some tax savings that you can't get with 401k for both the business, you know, and participants.
What should CPAs know about the 401k?
I guess the thing I would encourage maybe would be, regardless, just the profession generally has left the financial folks take over this space. And, I think they have the potential certainly to help out their clients.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being willing to speak with me.
Glad to do it, certainly, Courtney, any time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.